the wall. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 4, Chapter 24, text number 5. Antardano Nabha Sat Svatvyam Satyam Haridhanam Avindata Yaindram Ashva Hartaram Vidvam Api Najagnivan Antardhano Nabhasvatyam Havirdhanam Avindata Ya Indram Ashvahartaram Vidvan Api Najagnivan
Antardano Nabhasvatyam Haridhanam Vindata Yaindra Svahartaram Nidvanapi Najagnivam Antardano Nabhasvatyam Avirdhanam Avrindata Ya Indram Asvahartaram Vidvarapi Najagnivam Antardhano Namasvatyam Avirdhanam Avrindata Ya Indram Asvahataram Vidvarapi Najagnivam Antardhano Nabhasvatyam
Antardhano Nabhasvatyam
Avirdhanam Navindata
Avirdhanam Navindata
Ya Indram Asvahataram
Ya Indram Asvahataram
Vidvam Api Najagnivam
Vidvarapi Najagnivam
Ladies.
Antardhano Namasvatyam Avirdhanam Avindata Ya Indram Asvahartaram Vidvanapi Najagnivam
Antardhanaha The king of the name Antardhana. Nabhasvatyam. Unto his wife Nabhasvati. Havirdhanam. Of the name Havirdhana. Avindata. Obtained. Ya. Who? Indram. King Indra. Ashvahartaram, who was stealing the horse of his father. Vidvan Api, although he knew it. Jagnivan, did not kill. Translation, Maharaj, Antardhana had another wife named Nabhasvati, and by her he was happy to beget another son named Havirdhana. Since Maharaj Antardhana was very liberal, he did not kill Indra, while the demigod was stealing his father's horse at the sacrifice. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is understood from various scriptures and Puranas that the king of heaven, Indra, was very expert in stealing and kidnapping. He could steal anything without being visible to the proprietor, and he could kidnap anyone's wife without being detected. Not only that, once he raped the wife of Gautama Muni by using his disappearing art, and similarly, by becoming invisible, he stole the horse of Maharaj Prithu. Although in human society such activities are considered abominable, the demigod Indra was not considered to be degraded by them. Although Antardhana could understand that King Indra was stealing the horse from his father, he did not kill Indra, for he knew that if one is very powerful, if one is very powerful, we're taking off. Fasten your seat belts. Raise your tray tables. Seat in upright position. Okay. He knew, this is the son of Antardhana. No, Antardhana, the son of Prithu, knew that if one who is very powerful sometimes commits an abominable act, it should be disregarded. In Bhagavad Gita 9:30, it is clearly stated, Api chetsa duracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadur eva samantavya samyak yavasito hi saha. Thus the Lord says that even if a devotee commits an abominable act, he should be considered a sadhu or a pious man because of his unflinching devotion to the Lord. So we now have a license, right? Certified. Just become a devotee, and then you have a license to do any abominable act. And it's excused because you're a devotee. Wrong. So what's being said here? The devotees of the Lord never willingly commit any sinful act, but sometimes they commit something abominable due to their previous habits. Such acts should not be taken very seriously, however, because the devotees of the Lord are very powerful, whether they are on the heavenly planets or on this planet. Meaning this is not just, okay, that's what happens with demigods, but if you're here, then it doesn't apply. It applies in both cases. If, by chance, they commit something abominable, it should not be taken into account, but should be overlooked. Okay. So that the storyline is Prithu Maharaj had a son, and his son had a son, named Havirdhana, and the son of Prithu was given two things by Indra. He was given a special name, and he was given a special mystic power. And the name was Antardhana, indicating that he could appear or disappear at will. And so he was given a mystic power, and then he was given the name corresponding to the mystic power, because Indra had the same mystic power, which Indra misused when not only he stole the horse, but he put on a disguise. Indra, of all people, put on the disguise of being a renunciate sadhu, so he could just blend in with everybody at the yajna and then at the right time become invisible and steal the horse of Prithu's Ashvamedha yajna. So the son of Prithu saw it and he understood it and he didn't do anything. Now, a kshatriya, the duty of a kshatriya is to protect. Just listening yesterday, Prabhupada was describing the two words, brahmana and kripana. And the brahmana is, well, the kripana is miserly, and the brahmana is liberal. So he's making those two parallels. The miser is one who, he gave the example, someone is given some large sum of money and they like to look at it. Just look at it, that's what they like to do. Or count it. Oh, how many pieces of gold I have. Count my money and then come back later and count the money and come back later and count the money. And they don't use it for a good purpose, they just like counting the money or having it, and the happiness is having it. Or the other is losing it, squandering it. So that's the miser. And the brahmana is liberal. He sees what's a good purpose for this, and immediately it's gone. A nice example of this was Vasudev Datta, who is primarily known as in Lord Chaitanya's Leela as the one who requested Lord Chaitanya, you come to deliver all the fallen souls, please do so. All, not just human beings, all living entities within the universe, please deliver them. And if you think that they're too sinful, kindly transfer the reactions of their sinful deeds to me, and I'll accept the reactions. Please deliver them, even if it means millions of lives, births in hellish existence, no problem. Please deliver them. That's pretty liberal. But he exhibited his liberality in a different way also. He was an aristocratic brahmana, meaning he was very wealthy, but his practice was he was so liberal that he would give everything away, so that at the end of the day he didn't even have enough to maintain his family. And this was going on like regularly. So Lord Chaitanya instructed Shivananda, saying, you maintain the household affairs of Vasudev Datta, you're good. And you're liberal, but not so liberal you don't have anything for your family. And this is the nature of a brahmanas, liberal or charitable by nature, by disposition. So that's the duty of a brahmana, but is that the same duty of a kshatriya? Just be liberal. Que sera, sera. Live and let live. I'm okay, you're okay. A brahmana is not supposed to be like that. a brahmana is supposed to discriminate between what's to be done, what's not to be done, and ensure that what is to be done is being done, and ensure that what is not to be done is being done. And sometimes that takes some firmness. Sometimes it takes more than firmness. Sometimes it takes punishment. Sometimes it takes more than punishment. In this case, the reference is killing. The life of an aggressor may need to be killed, rather than say, oh, you were an aggressor. So, this is a wonderful topic. Where do we draw the line between forgiveness and taking firm action? It's not easy. Try being a leader for a while. See what happens, what it's like, and the kinds of decisions you have to make about firmness and, you can say, leniency or forgiveness. Now, on a personal basis, forgiveness is not so difficult. Someone was discussing this with me just the other day about, you know, I want to forgive, but it's not so easy. So I said the first part is wanting to forgive. That's you're more than halfway there if you want. And the individual said, this was in College Station. The individual said, I want to forgive. That's very clear. But I sincerely try to forgive. But the unhappy thought, the ill feeling, just appears again. So I try again. I want to forgive. It's gone for a little while, but then it comes back again. It just doesn't go away. What to do? How to be genuinely forgiving? So that's not exactly on topic. What's on topic is when or what are the circumstances for being forgiving? And what are the circumstances for not being forgiving? So, in this verse and in a previous purport, it's discussed the discrimination of Antardhana, the son of Prithu, was Indra is a great personality. Second, what Indra is doing is wrong. Not only wrong, it's my father. And I'm very obliged to my father. It's a religious activity that my father is engaged in, and Indra is interfering with that. Very bad. But I won't take any action. He's a king, the son of the king, the prince, Kshatriya, and his discrimination is going to the side of being liberal. Because the principle of forgiveness, of overlooking the transgression of a superior. So I'll just go right to the jugular vein, so to speak. The operative principle here is accidental or circumstantial only. By chance. If by chance, not by license. I'll be a little specific. This 9:33 Bhagavad Gita was 9:30 Bhagavad Gita was one of the favorite verses of Kirtanananda, saying I should be considered saintly. but his, you know, his behavior was not circumstantial. It was misuse of his position and authority over others, and he was quite an abusive person and was justifying it on the basis that I'm a devotee, not only a devotee, I'm sadhu. So it's justified, it should be overlooked. So there's this balance between overlooking and not overlooking. And where do you draw the line? It's those where do you draw the line questions are tough. It's a judgment question. But the operative principle is deliberate versus accidental. Repetitive versus a quite unusual circumstance forced kind of a situation. So, an example that Prabhupada gave is the tide. So, when the tide comes in, it comes to a certain line. And the tide goes out, it goes to a certain line. And in between, it's, you know, rising and falling, or coming in and going out. And it does that how many times? An uncountable number of times. But circumstantially, there may be a tidal wave or a tsunami. And here comes the ocean. It's not just to the line of the tide, but so when circumstances that are extraordinary like that happen, the land becomes then covered. But then when normal circumstances resume, it's the tide comes in, the tide goes out. So Prabhupada was saying like that, using that example, that is circumstantially, the waves of the material energy may be so strong that an individual, by circumstance, may behave in a way that's not their standard behavior. The standard behavior is bhajate mam ananya bhak. And anya means other, and ananya means no other. It's undivided devotion. Ananya bhak. It's like no circumstance creates bhakti, and no circumstance can destroy bhakti. It's a hoitukiya fatiyata. When one is genuinely situated in that kind of devotion, there is the predictable behavior, the coming and the going of the tide, the standard behavior for a Vaishnava is what we see, ananya bhakti. For such a person, there may be circumstantial other kind of behavior, bad behavior, durachar. Achar means behavior, and durachar means bad behavior. Sadachar means good behavior. Durachar means bad behavior, and sudurachar means very bad behavior. Even if it's this phrase apichet, it's used in other places in our Vedic literature also. It means it never happens. It's what Bhaktisiddhanta calls working hypothesis, supposing something that never happens, happens. So, in real life, it sometimes happens. A sadhu may do something extraordinary, out of character. Let's take the example of Maharaj Prikshit in his decorating the sage Shamik Rishi with a dead snake. Even before that, becoming overwhelmed by thirst. That's not Maharaj Prikshit. That's complete control of his senses. Even within the womb of his mother, he was able to withstand the force of Brahmastra before Lord Vishnu checked that Brahmastra. He had control of his senses. What's the question of thirst so that he becomes overwhelmed. That's not Maharaj Parikshit. And anger because the sage was in samadhi? That's not Maharaj Parikshit. So how are we to regard that behavior of Maharaj Parikshit? He's a sadhu. The behavior isn't nice. He's a sadhu. And the sage regarded him that way. Now we'll go to Indra. The reference is made in the purport here. Very abominable. He raped the wife of Gautama Muni. Horrible. I mean, Prabhupada doesn't use soft language, he used hard language. Not like, you know, he became overwhelmed by the beauty of the wife of Gautama Muni. Or he seduced the wife of Gautama Muni. He used the word he raped Gautama Muni's wife. Abominable. Now, in the purport, Prabhupada is saying one thing when what Gautama Muni did was another thing. Gautama Muni, when he came to understand what happened, he cursed. And the curse was very severe. You're so attracted by the parts of a female's body, let your body be filled with those parts of a female's body. Thousands of them all over your body. Oh, please don't do that. Make them eyes instead, so he had thousands of eyes. So was Gautama Muni wrong? Or when Indra cut off the head of his Purohit, his spiritual master, who was taking the place of Brihaspati, because Indra had offended Brihaspati, so Brahma gave the advice, you have a big problem now, you lost your kingdom because Brihaspati's gone. So engage the son of Tvashta, Vishwarup, he's very expert. He'll help you regain your kingdom. So Vishwarup helped them regain the kingdom, was performing the yajnas for Somarasa, but some of the Somarasa was given to the relatives of Vishwarup, who were from the family of Diti, thus they were daityas, and Indra became very upset. What? You're giving Somarasa to the daityas? And he cut off his head. So Durachar. Tvashta didn't say, oh, I'll be liberal. I'll forgive you. That's not what Tvashta did. So these are... Here we have Antardhana, forgiving. Two situations where two Brahmanas who are liberal, they weren't forgiving. They were punishing severely. So, how to make these calls, these decisions on should we be forgiving, should we be... So this gets into, you know, the area of debate within ISKCON of conservative and liberal approach, or pizza and pakoras, as Vrajabihari called it. The pakoras is we should only serve Vedic foods, and pizza, no, it's also vegetarian, liberal. There are different views on this topic, and there are obviously there are different approaches taken by different persons in different times on this topic. But what is needed minimally is what's the principle behind excusing, not excusing, and one is if it's repetitive. versus circumstantial. And there's other things that are to be considered. Is the person duly remorseful if they've done something? Because for a Vaishnava, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, listen, hear this part carefully. Bhakti Vinod Thakur has described that the remorse or regret for a Vaishnava is purifying. It's a form of tapa. Specifically, he describes in an essay, short essay called Pancha Sangskara, that for the Vedic procedure for initiation, there are different procedures, and there's five in number, pancha, and one of them is tapa. In the Sri Vaishnava tradition, he describes there's the branding with a hot metal making the symbols of Vishnu on the shoulder of the initiate. But he says Lord Chaitanya was very merciful. He didn't have that tapa. His tapa was regret or remorse. So it's over our past misuse of free will. A Vaishnav should be and remain humble, acknowledging how foolish I've been. We find this in elevated Vaishnavas in their prayers to the Lord, Prahlad Maharaj. There's so many examples of elevated Vaishnavas that regret their material circumstance. It sustains humility, but it's also purifying. It keeps one in a purified state. So this is another indicator of whether forgiveness or, you know, to the degree to which leniency should be exercised. If a person who has done something wrong remains defiant and, what to speak of, even denial and so on, and it's known that the individual has done something abominable, then less leniency. Anyway, it's a discrimination call kind of a situation. But there are factors that help a thoughtful individual decide, or a leader on behalf of those who he's leading decide, should this person in this circumstance be excused? In all cases, we want to, as the Bible teaches, forgive the sinner, maybe not the sin. And we don't hold ill feelings towards the person, but the behavior is certainly, if behavior is abominable, behavior is abominable. Now what about the soul? What's in the best interest of the soul? That's how we should be thinking. Very, very wonderful example for us as Gaudiya Vaishnavas is Narada Muni and his approach to Nalakuvira and Manigriva. You read that section, I've read that section dozens of times and I like very much. The inner contemplation of Narada when Nalakuvira and Manigriva in effect have offended him. He doesn't hold on to, oh, they've offended me. They don't know who I am. I'm Narada. That's not his platform. His platform is these poor young men. How foolish they are. How shameless they are. No remorse, no recognition. They're intoxicated. Not only with liquor, they're intoxicated with their position. What is the best thing to help them? And he contemplates very carefully, what's the best thing to help them? Then he does the best thing to help them. And it turns out the best thing, in his judgment, is they should be relieved of that position of being the sons of Kuvera and be without all that opulence. And, okay, what other situation? They want to stand naked? Let them stand naked. They can stand naked as trees. But it's not like, the mood is not, well, I'll show them. I can curse them and they they'll become trees. It's not a tit for tat. It's a mode of service. If we have them, if we adopt, or if we're situated in a mood of service unto a person or a circumstance, service unto Krishna in that circumstance, that surely helps getting the right intelligence how to deal with one of these judgment call things. Any comments or questions? Yes.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation of mercy.
Yeah.
But we discarded the Krishna Das for one offense.
And Chota Haridas banned him forever. Mukunda, he banned him for 10,000 lifetimes. So the implication is, how do we understand that behavior in light of he's the most merciful incarnation? He's teaching. Through his own devotee, he's teaching that, you know, there's a certain, for future generations, immediate followers, and for future generations of Lord Chaitanya's associates, his devotees, there are certain areas that Lord Chaitanya wanted us to hold in very high regard. In Chota Haridas, it's the strictness of sannyas. It's not to be taken lightly. Lord Chaitanya didn't lose affection for Chota Haridas, demonstrated by what happened later. He gave his association and gave Chota Haridas the opportunity to serve him very confidentially, in a very private way. In Krishna Das's case, he was given some other service. Very confidential service. Very confidential service. But there was a lesson. When one is in the service of a superior, that checks your behavior. The service to that superior checks your behavior. And you go outside of the service to your superior, you're in for big trouble. You're vulnerable. And when you're immediately vulnerable, commonly something unfortunate happens. So the lesson is, stay faithful to your position of service to your superior. You take a position of service to a superior. Stay faithful to that. You'll be protected. You don't remain faithful to that, Lord Chaitanya is not pleased. Your protection is taken. And very, very unfortunate consequences. Lord Chaitanya came and rescued him. He said, I literally grabbed him by the hair. I guess he had a big secret. And pulled him from the Badaharis. And then didn't say anything till he got back, and then he was given some lesson. And then given immediately by the Vaishnavas some service, very confidential service.
Yeah.
I can't hear you. This machine is louder than your voice. We have to give you a microphone.
Prabhu said Krishna forgave Lord Brahma and
Indra. Krishna forgave Brahma and Indra. Anything else?
So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says the Lord Indra's behavior is not considered degrading.
The language specifically. Although in human society such activities are considered abominable, the demigod Indra was not considered to be degraded by them. So your question?
My question is like, in human standard, you know, the standard of the morality, shouldn't be higher in demigods compared to human beings?
No, it should. The standard for those who are more elevated should be higher than those who are less elevated. So if in human society this is abominable, shouldn't it also be abominable for the demigods? It is abominable. At least in this case, a very liberal presentation is being made that it was circumstantial. The behavior is abominable. But because of circumstance, that's not the character of Indra, he's a devotee, then we overlook that. In that sense, you know, the standard is whether, because later on it says whether in this society or in heavenly society is to be overlooked. If it's occasional, circumstantial, or by chance.
Lord Indra's behavior is kind of repetitive, right? He so many times, right?
It's a very liberal presentation. Someone? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. In Krishna consciousness, when we're a neophyte devotee, we sometimes commit offenses to each other. And sometimes the offenses are not forgiven. Punchline of the question?
So what are you saying, like, over the period of
time? I got it. So what's the punchline of the question?
The question is, how do you get over and what is
it? How do you get over
the
situation? Okay. Excuse, you know, so many kirtans and age, my hearing is shot. So excuse me for having to ask 5 times. I had a hearing test done, and they have a term for it, something, hearing loss or something like that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in Madhurya Kadambini a very nice, you know, what should be the position of, this isn't exactly what your question is, but what should be the position of a devotee who has made an offense to another devotee one goes to that devotee and requests forgiveness. Then he says, supposing that devotee doesn't give forgiveness, what to do? Wait some time and go and ask again, and go and ask again, and do this multiple times explicitly. If that devotee still doesn't forgive, then the devotee who has made that offense should understand, I've made my sincere effort and Krishna knows my sincere effort, and you go on chanting the holy name. And then you're freed from the offense of sadhu-ninda. But that wasn't exactly your question. Your question is, how do we deal with situations that are where there's a lingering holding on to some bad feeling? Now, I'm showing from the side of the devotee who has offended one who is holding on to the bad feeling. Now, what about ourselves holding on to a bad feeling over something that's happened in the past? That's the second. Okay. That's what this lady was asking at College Station. Forgive. How do I forgive? I want to forgive. And I sincerely want to forgive. And I try, and, you know, the bad thought comes again. Where that discussion ended was, you continue along that path, and at the same time, and more importantly, you make your connection with Krishna. You pray to Krishna that may your devotion grow in such to such a degree that that bad feeling will just fall away. Among some seed that you want to sprout, there's a hard shell around the seed, and as long as there's that hard shell around the seed stays, you know, protected, stays dormant. But if you nurture that seed, put it in water, little sunlight, what's inside, life will, it'll start to grow. So bhakti grows like that, by the watering process of hearing and chanting, simultaneously desiring, praying to Krishna, please remove this feeling. When the fullness inside of devotion to Krishna, while wishing that ill feeling to go away, it'll fall away, like the hard shell of a seed. It eventually becomes soft and just falls away because the inside becomes stronger and vibrant and filled with life. It falls away. One can do so in between, intermittently, by a conscious act. Like this lady yesterday was describing for forgiving. So there's this saying, and you can even do it visually, take your ill feelings to a river and deposit them in the river. Just throw them in the river and they're gone. You can't go back and get them again. They're gone. So ceremoniously, emotionally, just leave yourself of those feelings. But as long as there's not sufficient devotion or connection to Krishna, even if it's downstream, they come back. The real solution is Krishna consciousness. On the strength of Krishna consciousness, that contamination, that unwanted thing, can be dismissed. Yes, Krishna people. If the devotee is not forgiving, back to Vishwanath.
Would that be considered an offense?
No.
What if that devotee was trying to apologize?
It's not an offense. It's I wouldn't consider it Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur doesn't say that person who didn't forgive is offensive. We could say they're not exhibiting the character of a Vaishnava who is forgiving by nature. Amanina, manadena. They're not in the Kirtaniya Sadahari category. They have something they need to work on, but it's not an offense. You're offensive, you're not forgiving me. That's not the case.
But then that devotee should take that repentance and saying, why I can't.
Yes.
And therefore, this is something I have to
do. I have to work on, I have to become more forgiving. Sure. The word Goswami is coming through clearly, but the other words are not. The incident of Rupa Goswami. You want to recite it or you want me to recite it? He hadn't offended the Brahmana, but the Brahmana had felt offended. And so there was an obstacle in meditating upon Krishna for Rupa Goswami because the Brahmana felt that Rupa Goswami had somehow offended him. So, yeah, we want to remove those obstacles, right? So it was taken care of. So now what do we do? We're not Rupa Goswami, but, you know, we may have inadvertently, I know I have, inadvertently, even in efforts to try to purposefully serve another Vaishnava, another Vaishnava may have misunderstood the act and the intent and thought, why are they doing this? Radhakrishna is nodding. Yes, I know what that experience is. We probably all do. Oh, there's just a sec, Mataji. So, what about all those people out there in the course of the path of our lives that have felt hurt by something that we did? We don't even know it, that they're feeling something like that. Prabhupada was asked that question. And his answer was, therefore we pray every day. Bhancha kalpatubhyasya kripasimu bhivacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Not in a mechanical way, but in a sincere way. It's an obstacle to our progress that invariably there are persons out there who hold some feelings. They may not even have holding the feelings, but they've had some feelings. And there's some hurt, some damage that's been done. We want to clear that as far as we can. But we don't even know who those persons are or where they are, what the circumstances are. And there's some the other way around too. Persons we don't even know that we did something and they were greatly pleased. That happens too. Wasn't like I went out of my way to please this person, that person, but something happened and they felt greatly benefited. It's just part of living in this material world. As we're trying to serve Krishna, we should be doing our very best to avoid stepping on people's toes or hurting their sensibilities, but it's bound to happen. As long as you exist, you're going to do something. As long as you're doing something, some of that's going to be there. So we should be very careful. Don't take a license to do whatever we want to do because our intention is sincere. There's this saying, even the path to hell is paved with good intention. So we often rest, you know, our justifieds, and there was good intention. But good intention, I learned as a teenager, good intention is not good enough. Good intention is necessary. But good intention is not enough. we need the mercy of the merciful Vaishnavas, and we need Krishna's mercy. We need that. Okay, yes?
If we feel some enmity towards a particular devotee, considered it something in opposition to our own spiritual master at some point in time, how do we forgive that, what we perceive as an indiscretion? Or should we forgive it? Towards a spiritual master, not just an ordinary devotee.
A lot depends on the circumstance when you use the word indiscretion, or you know, what was it that was done or said, or not done or not said.
Well, what it was someone accused one spirit, the devotee accused one spiritual master of doing something which was totally untrue.
Okay.
And it was a totally unfounded.
Yeah, okay. And the pieces of the puzzle are coming together very quickly. So you want to know what should you do as a disciple of that spiritual master. Well, one thing that's appropriate is to pray to Krishna for the well-being of that individual who did or maybe even still currently holds the position that something that didn't happen happened. Wrongly accused. A really nice thing for you to do is to read the Shamantaka Jewel story, you know, a few times, because twice Krishna was wrongly accused, once of stealing, and another time for being the cause of what never happens in Dwarka, disease and drought and, you know, bad circumstances. Now, how did Krishna respond? Now, that's Krishna responding towards himself, but it gives a clue of how you as a disciple, or how one as a disciple, can feel. On the one hand, you know, like fire, one can feel that. And on the other hand, pray to Krishna that this individual is forgiven by Krishna. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he's forgiven. His first prayer was, please relieve my father of all the reactions for all of his sinful activities. And the answer was, because he's your father, that's already done. So ask for something else. But the heart of a Vaishnava is those who have made offenses, let them be relieved from the reactions of those offenses so they can carry on in a positive way in their devotional service, in their relationship with Krishna. And by the way, Krishna sure would be nice if they saw the light. You can do something in that department too, that would be great. Yes. Well, it depends on the person. There are some persons it's best to not approach because they'll just do more of the same. Just leave it alone because they'll just dig their hole deeper. Yes? There's a certain point in which yes. That's an important lesson of life to learn, and that's it also discriminating, you know, where do you draw the line kind of thing. But I'll give credit to Bhurijan Prabhu for teaching me that lesson. It's brahminical. There are certain things that we have duties to do, and there are certain things that as he was pointing out, it's between that person and Krishna. You've spoken, you've acted, you played your part. Now it's between that person and Krishna. And the modes of nature are going to act. You know, there may be, like when Krishna exonerated himself from the accusation that he stole the Shyamataka jewel and did in Prasena. There may have been persons in Dwarka who said, oh, something, something, something. Krishna chose, you know, his favorite people and they just said what he wanted them to say and really he did it. Or something. That kind of, you know, the modes of nature are going to act. That's the nature of this place. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. What's that?
You had one question.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see this. I'm not only deaf, I'm blind. Go right ahead. Please accept my apology.
This is actually not a question, because some of the devotees coming here, they probably do not know the cure. But they do probably advocate whatever they are doing or whatever they are thinking, but they do come here. And we
in Potomac or in Washington or both?
Here.
Initiated are less inclined to associate with the uninitiated.
And they kind of ignore them, and when you say Hare Krishna, many times they will respond. And this has offended many devotees who are coming here and they say, well, we're not going to talk to them, say you are wrong. But if you come to your life, take that to you. If you come to the temple, if you don't like somebody or somebody's ideas or thinking, ignore it, you know, just do that in darshan and then go for it. This is not happening. I would very much prefer every Sunday when people are having Krishna, picnic or whatever you call it, sadhana. All initiated devotees meet or sit down with uninitiated devotees. I see completely different. All initiated devotees sit with themselves and it's not that desirable. Again, I take that if you done, I said that's fine, it doesn't bother me, but it bothers many people. So, again, I find it worthy to take appropriate action from the other.
I'll offer one response, two responses. One of them is within our North American leadership effort of strategic planning, of like how to go forward in the future, one of the things that was developed was, we called it welcome mat, like a hospitality booklet, you know, a manual was developed. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a welcome mat group for the temple. And that welcome mat group for the temple rather than receiving, like, you're not doing a good job kind of a message, you know, a little appreciation, room for improvement, appreciation kind of communication would help. You follow? Rather than the stick saying, you're not doing a good job. I'm sure that they're trying to do a good job and there's room for improvement. And a voice that amplifies the room for improvement would, I'm sure, be appreciated by those who are trying to improve. They're committed to that specific segment of what our life in the Hare Krishna temple here is. But honey attracts bees more than vinegar attracts bees. Second point is, there are, from the years that I've been visiting Potomac, you probably have seen me there if you were there, I have first-hand experience of families who visited the Potomac Temple for months. One family, they're now leading, or they're parts of that group, that welcome mat group in Potomac. But they almost stopped coming to the Potomac Temple because they went to the temple for 5.5, almost 6 months, and no one said hello. And another two other families, it was less than that. So, room for improvement. If you've been going there for years, there's a devotee named, I think his name is Rasikananda, or something like that. He finally met them. And not only met them, he called them up afterwards. And not only that, he went and visited them. And because of that, they started making commitments to, you know, participate in, and so on. And now they're, you know, so honey more than vinegar, and, you know, compares this place to that place, it really isn't productive. What's really productive is, you know, let's make this welcome mat initiative, you know, really, really dynamic. What do you think? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.